I don't think I've ever been at a board meeting where we need more to do.
We are recording again. It is 9:36. Let's do a roll call just to make sure that everybody is back. Dr. King, we know, is absent. Dr. Bustillo?
Here.
Mr. Leone?
Here.
Dr. Cornwall?
Here.
Mr. Greer?
Here.
Mr. Barton?
Here.
Ms. Cardoza?
Present.
Ms. Richardson? Ms. Crowley?
Present. Having a little technical difficulty.
There we go. Ms. Crowley?
Here.
And I'm Judy Chevius. So we are all back. Dr. King is still absent. Mr. Hosterman's presentation is going to be held until 10 a.m. as the agenda indicates. So we're going to move forward with the executive director's report. So the first thing on the executive director's report is brought to the board's attention just based on some communications, some information that the board staff has received with respect to social media and social media posts. In the recent past, we have had two such instances where the board has received information regarding certain social media posts. And in looking into the information, both Mindy and myself have investigated what we've been told in each circumstance. And thus far, the two that have been presented to us are typically not directly related to the practice of physical therapy. The information, I believe, is coming to us because somewhere in this person's profile, it's indicated that they are a physical therapist or have connection to physical therapy in some fashion. The two that we've received thus far have been posts that the reporting individual has found to be offensive in some way. As those posts aren't engaged in the practice of physical therapy and are just purely social media posts, to date, we have been advising the individual to reach out directly to the person if that is appropriate, reach out to the social media platform if that's appropriate. But thus far, we haven't found anything that has fallen under the jurisdiction of the board. And so we're bringing this to your attention just for awareness to determine if there's anything that you would have us do differently with respect to this type of information. Of course, if it's something that's directly related to a case or directly, you know, patient based or something along those lines, we would have a different approach, of course. But if we can find no connection to the practice of physical therapy and what is being reported to us, we don't see that we have jurisdiction in these matters.
I'll just add that the complaints that are filed, the allegation is based on ethical violations and, you know, to Judy. The nature of the complaint is that people on social media that have PT after their name, one he did verify was licensed in state of Arizona, but his name is general. They were directed in the spirit or in the practice of physical therapy. And so, as Judy has stated, we were hard-pressed to really find that was an ethical violation because it wasn't in the practice and it wasn't directed at a particular person. So it was basically homophobic remarks. One of them was fat shaming, as an example. So I think we just want to make you aware that we're getting these types of complaints. And if there's been anything different that you would like us to do in terms of the further investigation.
Okay.
Are we agendized to discuss this, or is this just kind of an FYI?
It says discussion.
It's agenda. It's for review and discussion.
Okay. I mean, I don't know what the rest of the board feels. I think you guys are definitely on the right track. I would be very, very, very concerned about starting to troll the social media pages of physical therapists regarding posts that somebody else finds offensive, especially given the fact that we're a government entity and are going to have First Amendment concerns as well. I think that's the right answer. And in fact, I'd be even a little hesitant of suggesting that they contact the social media providers, given the allegations I've seen recently of governments colluding with social media. I think you're right, though, to just, you know, it's not our jurisdiction. I don't think we have any reason to get involved in it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If it's not within the practice of physical therapy, I don't really think that we have, as you mentioned, any jurisdiction to do anything about it. I mean, that's probably something that they're more warranted to go to that person's employer, or, you know, so the social media platform, as you guys mentioned, you know, something along those lines. You know, as egregious as it sounds like, you know, the comments that were made was, you know, I just don't think it's anything that we can do anything about, unfortunately.
Well, perfect. We will continue down the same vein if we receive additional complaints of this nature. Mr. Barton, your comment is well received. We'll take that and consider it further, and probably have some discussions with Mr. Harris that if and when we get another one of these that we need to move forward on.
Yeah, and to be clear, I don't think you guys are doing anything wrong. I think you guys are doing actually a superb job. But that is something that I've seen other people accusing about, and of course we always want to be cautious about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Any other discussion, comments, questions about that?
If this person is posting things like that on social media, I think it's only a matter of time before they end up in front of the board anyway, because they're probably going to do it in person too.
Okay, then the next thing is the renewal status update. I feel like I should have a drum roll for this. We are pretty excited. As of 6 p.m. last night, we have, out of the anticipated eligible 8,800 PTs and PTAs to renew their licenses and certificates. Thus far, we have 6,571 who have renewed. 6,499 of those have been approved, and there are 72 in a submitted state. So the good news is that the week-long issue from the very first week of July that was dropping everybody into the submitted state that had to be processed individually, that looks to be over. We have ridden that wave, and Monica has done a fantastic job of moving those forward. There are still a few outliers out there that if their application was initiated in the first week of July, they're still going to land in a submitted state and have to be processed manually. But we're hopeful that those are few and far between at this point. The 72 that are in the submitted state are reflective of those individuals who have provided an affirmative answer to a background question, or who have indicated that they have at some point been, I forget the exact wording, but it's a citizenship question, and that they have at some point been issued a work visa, and just to make sure that citizenship paperwork is all in place. Unfortunately, there are a handful of people, even though the question itself says that if you are a U.S. citizen, respond no. there are a handful of people who are still responding yes. So unfortunately, that's a few false positives that we have to kind of weed through as well. But in that stack, we're down to about 72 people.
And so I can give you another update. We only have 11 in the submitted. So,
all right. Well, someone's been hard at work overnight. So, yay, go team.
There's only 11. And then we also have a lot of people that have previously reported, like if they were disciplined in different years or the year before, and they continue to report it every single renewal period. So a handful of those are also fall in that category where I just have to go back and make sure it's something that has been reported. And if they are, we just approve them and then move forward. So as of last night, after 6 o'clock, Judy, we only have 11.
Yay. Yay. Someone was working in the quiet hours without the phone ringing.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that. So the of the total submitted, we have about 75% of those who are eligible to renew have renewed. And we have basically our one week left? Oh, heavens. As of tomorrow, it's 1 week left. So it'll be crunch time. So, and of course, we know that there's going to be a certain level of attrition, people that don't renew, people that move out of state and whatnot. So, so then the next item on the agenda is the continuing competence audit question. So we've provided for you some details about past audits on renewal years, and we will, of course, be performing the continuing competence audit. By rule, we have to send out the audit notices within 60 calendar days following the renewal deadline, so we'll be working on that. What we need the board to do is identify an amount of audits to engage in. As you can see by the documentation in your drive, that in the past years, the audits, with the exception of the anomaly in 2018, it's been roughly around 200. The putting a blatant percentage is a little bit nebulous, simply because at the outset of a renewal season, we don't really know how many people are going to renew. So we kind of base our numbers off of the anticipated renewals. We are suggesting at this point a 2% audit with a maximum of 200 individuals. We feel that that's what staff will be able to accommodate, will be able to process in the timeframes that need to occur. And as well, we have kind of updated the internal policy, and we've included that as well. We've kind of updated the internal policy of the processing of these. In internal discussions and discussions with Mr. Harris, we realized that the way that this document previously read, there was a little bit of crossover in exactly how to handle those found to be non-compliant. So we've written this in such a way that we believe that according to the rules, anybody found to be non-compliant is granted 6 months to come into compliance. And so our intent is to open those complaints, but not really necessarily be processing the complaints until that 6 month period is over, giving them the full time. So we have the full picture of what's occurred, whether they've responded favorably or, you know, have, you know, through whatever mechanism come into compliance, and how exactly to move forward. So hopefully you've had a chance to kind of review that, and this information is presented to you, and it's respect it's presented in respect to this renewal cycle only. I anticipate we'll be back again in 2024. Just as a reminder, in 2024, we anticipate we will be on a new platform, a new licensing complaint platform. So there will be some, you know, probably some challenges as well as some benefits of that. So I don't want to look too far into the future right now. That's just too much unknown. But for right now, this is what we're suggesting, and it's presented to you for your discussion.
Judy, based on past years, do you have an idea of how many people of the 200 you find out of compliance?
So with that, yes, it's generally less than about 20-25. There's a fair amount, when you're doing an audit like this, there's a fair amount of back and forth. So they send the information, or in previous years when the online aptitude system was available, it was all uploaded. But there can be, like in 2020, it was pretty much by email that they sent us their documentation. And there can be some back and forth, you know, maybe all of them didn't come through, or pieces of it don't display the contact hours or things like that. So it makes it a little bit difficult to tabulate. So you do go back and forth with some of that. And so in some cases, those compliance issues are just purely based on the documentation, not necessarily fully representing the whole picture until we get that information. But I did look at past years. It was a little difficult to get solid, reliable information to know of an accurate number, because once they've come into compliance, some of the notes have been changed back and forth. But what I recall from that, we find about 20 to 25 individuals maybe who aren't.
Okay. That's actually sounds good, because I remember when they first required CEUs for renewal, that the number of those out of compliance was 25%.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're looking at 12% maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So at least this looks like people have taken it a little bit more serious.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was still around 25%, then I would say maybe we ought to do more audits, which would then mean we need to have some other staff, you know, for the interim to kind of do that, because adding another 100 or 200 to the audit would be overwhelming to the current staff. So, but I don't know, it sounds like that's an improvement to me.
We field a lot of questions in this arena, and mm-hmm. in hopes of mitigating some of that, you know, we've been sending out weekly emails, and it's got a newsletter attached to all of them, outlining that. We've got it on the website. We've got the rules, and the statutes plastered all over the website. And, but you know, we still get the questions. There's a fair amount of confusion and categories and whatnot, but at least they're engaged and asking the questions. So that's a good thing. So on this one, Mr. Harris, do we need a motion to actually set the number? You're muted, but I was seeing him nod.
Thank you, Judy. I apologize. Yes, to adopt your proposal of 2% at a cap of 200 or whatever the board deems appropriate for this renewal period.
Thank you.
So I would move that we set audits for this coming year at 2% with a cap of 200.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Do we have any discussion? It's been moved and seconded to set the audit level for the 2022 renewal period at a 2% with a cap of 200. Dr. Bustillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Cornwell?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Motion passes. Thank you. And then we move on to the financials. Any questions about the financials? This is these are the June financials. Typically at a meeting, we have the previous month's financials, but June marked the end of the fiscal year. So these were slow in coming out, and then July marks the month in which they do a lot of adjustments and you know, those last minute lingering bills and payments and revenues. So we haven't yet received the July financials. So this is the June showing the end of the fiscal year 2022. Any questions or discussion? Okay, moving right along. And we have stretched pretty successfully, so thank you. We have now just the licensees, certificates, and registrations that were processed in July. This, of course, does not include the renewals. This is on top of the renewals. So staff has most definitely been burning the candle at any end. So
Judy, I have a quick question on new licensees and certificates.
Sure.
So for a lot of the new PTs and PTAs that have come on at the company I work with, I'm noticing that during the renewal period, they're automatically getting their license with a 2024 renewal date on it. So is that pretty typical then by the time the process starts July 1?
No, not July 1. That is an August 1 circumstance.
It's an August 1. Okay. Uh-huh. That's August what I wanted 1. To just be clear on.
Yeah, the transition happened on August 1st. I will say to you that we knew that was coming. We didn't know exactly when the system was set to do that. And what we've done is we've looked back at historical data and discovered that, yes, on August 1st is when it was set forward. And I think that really kind of dates back to the dates of the paper applications or when the board was doing all of the approvals. They hit a point where they just didn't present any anymore at the board. And that could be typically just simply because it was physically impossible to make the turnaround in a paper system to do all of that in that time frame. So the system is set on August 1st to automatically advance to the 2024.
Okay. Awesome. That's good to know.
Mm-hmm. So any additional questions? I see Mr. Hosterman has joined us again. What I would like to do, because I know his presentation is involved, is I would like to stop the recording and restart it just so we have a fresh recording for his presentation. So bear with me one moment while I stop the recording. We're stopping it at 10 o'clock.